The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
The Rays have suffered another heartbreak when it comes to starting pitching. Josh Jung is out for a long period of time. Tim Anderson has a glass chin. That and a whole lot more on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by the good folks at Home Run Index. We'll be hearing from them a little bit later on. I'm Jeff Erickson, here with Fred Zinke, as always, on Tuesday. Hey, Fred, how's it going?
I'm good. As the listeners will quickly find out, my voice is a little hoarse this week, but all my baseball acumen is still upstairs, still right up here.
All right. Yeah. Very good. You're just doing a Barry White impersonation. That's all. So you get that going for you.
A few octaves higher, but yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. Hey, let's jump right into when we were putting together our outline. The news dropped today about Shane McClanahan, unlikely to pitch the rest of the season. All options are on the table, including possibly Tommy John surgery. Devastating blow to fantasy owners, let alone the Rays, who just can't buy a break when it comes to starting pitching this year.
Yeah, I mean, you go back and look at what their rotation looked like right at the outset of the season and what it looks like now. And yeah, I don't know what the long-term takeaways of this will be as far as, like, is this the Rays' fault? Is this, you know, I've seen people theorize that the Rays, you know, have acquired pitchers sometimes who have injury risk associated with them, and that's why they get them on the cheap. I don't know mm-hmm. if that's really accurate or not, but if you look at that rotation, yeah, from the beginning of the season, when they had McClanahan, when they had Springs, Rasmussen, and they were soaring out in front of everybody, and now all three of those pitchers done, you know, probably for the year. I don't think Rasmussen's 100% for sure done for the year, but I don't think anyone's waiting to get him back. So that does not now look much like a good playoff rotation anymore.
No, it doesn't. And this is a team, I mean, they've been kind of scuffling anyhow, even with McClanahan. I mean, they had such an amazing start, right? So they're currently, I mean, they still have a pretty good odds of making the playoffs because they buffered in so much. Like, if you look at playoff odds, estimators are at like 95%. It was a lot higher though at one point in time. It was like 99% at one point in time. If you look at kind of like their game logs and all that, I mean, they're currently 22 games over 500. They got to 22 really quickly.
That's right. They've kind of just been holding serve. I know, because my Blue Jays have been chasing them and not really gaining, but not necessarily playing great. Like, kind of the Jays seem to kind of win a few, lose a few, win a few, lose a few. But I think the Rays, like, they've got a 7-game lead on Seattle, like, who is the team that would have to catch them right now to knock them off, and a 9-game lead on Boston and a 9.5-game lead on the Yankees. So I think the Rays will play enough Rays baseball to get into the postseason. It's just, I don't know if they can get past, I don't know, the first round's so short, like, maybe, like, anything can happen in the first round. It's just so short. It just doesn't seem anymore like a team, like, with a pitching staff that can, that could go all the way this year. Yeah. I'm starting to kind of cross them off my list of AL teams that I think could go all the way, especially because there's some really good AL teams right now.
Yeah. And the thing is, everybody needs a pitcher. I mean, and they did their best. They got Aaron Civale.
Yeah.
And if you read Joe Sheehan's newsletter, and you should, But his latest one, he does his like third newsletters where basically kind of goes team by team, you know, based off of his predictions of where they're, you know, whether they're going to make the playoffs or not and all that. And there's like today was like going through some of the contenders that may not make the playoffs. He didn't even get to the Rays. Obviously, he does think the Rays will make it, but all of them uniformly failed to get the pitching they needed. The Reds didn't do anything. You know, the Diamondbacks, they got a closer in Paul Sewald, but they couldn't get a starter. You know, you kept going through these teams, and the common thread was the market wasn't there. There wasn't that starter available. Now, in the case of the Reds, that's not true. Any starter would have been better than Luke Weaver, you know, than pushing Ben Lively to the utter brink. So then he had to go on the IL afterward. Any pitcher, any live arm would have been better, you know, just because of the way they've been overusing their bullpen. But, you know, the Rays, at least they did do one trade, but they paid a pretty hefty price for Aaron Civale. They, you know, a top 100 prospect. Some at one point was a top 10 prospect in some rankings. He had Cal Manzardo had kind of cooled off on that a little bit, had a rougher year in AAA and is also dealing with some stuff, injuries and personal issues this year. But nonetheless, still a legitimately big name prospect. And, you know, they got a pitcher in Civale that's more than just this year. So that helps, but it's still pretty, like, they had to pay a pretty big price for a slightly better than league average pitcher.
Yeah, and they're going to need him now a lot. You know, he's not a luxury for them. Like, he's, I don't know, like now Tyler Glass now, they're hoping he's going to start Saturday. He shut down for a couple of days here. They're hoping he'll start Saturday. Like Savali's going to be for sure in their top three starters the rest of the way. Could even be higher than that. So, you know, I was looking, the Rays, they still rank third in the majors in run differential by a pretty wide margin. I know they built up a lot of that at the beginning of the season, but I never count out the Rays, right?
Right.
They're such a smart organization, but they definitely, to me, like looking at that pitching staff, like it doesn't look like a staff that can go deep into the playoffs.
I'd agree with that.
I do think it's a staff that can hold this lead. I'd be surprised if the Rays didn't make the playoffs at this point.
Yeah, I think that's the right assessment. They'll make the playoffs. They might even advance around, depending on what, you know, slot they get. I mean, say if they drop somehow to the sixth seed, then they get to face the Twins. I could see them beating the Twins pretty comfortably. I think if they're against the Yankees, I'm not afraid of them either, actually. Although I think the Yankees would probably be favored, although they just lost Carlos Rodon. They, you know, their hitting has been a disaster. The Yankees probably aren't. I mean, they lost the Rizzo story, the Herman story. Every day it's a bad story coming out from Yankee land right now. But, and I guess that's just kind of the point. Like, teams are kind of like scuffling to the wire here that, you know, are good teams. The Red Sox just got swept by your Jays. The Jays, though, have been pounded by their own division. They have their own issues. We'll see. I do like them right against Cleveland right now. We'll talk about that shortly, but the Angels haven't won a game in August. You know, the Mariners were traded away their closer, but yet they're surging right now. So who knows? It's a kind of a complicated picture.
For sure. I think the pitcher the Rays are really missing right now is Taj Bradley. Like he was promoted in the middle of April. Like, you know, they obviously had high hopes for him. He got off to like an okay start with them. Hasn't been good. Like all of his July starts were average to bad. He's kind of the guy they're missing. I feel like if he was effective, like he has a 5.67 ERA. If that was a 3.67 ERA and they could count on him, like that would be, now you're like, okay, yeah, I got Glass now and him and Savali and Eflin. Okay. We can work with that. I think he's the guy who, like, obviously the injured pitchers let them down in a different way, but he's the one who let them down, you know, from a performance standpoint.
And it turns out, like, we were criticizing them for sending Bradley down after like his debut and then after a second good start. Turns out maybe he did need more work. It wasn't just he's used to a 6-day rest schedule or something of that nature as opposed to 5 days or a 6-day rotation as opposed to a 5-day rotation. You know, they said that as part of the thing. Maybe that there's some accuracy to it and we should forever stop questioning the Rays when it comes to their handling of that. But nonetheless, I mean, I will say this, they've had a lot of pitchers go down, not just this year, but in previous years too. Not just starting pitchers, but a lot of the relief pitchers have gotten hurt over the years. Does that bring you pause to drafting Rays pitchers next year?
Well, they've also pitched really well when they're not hurt.
Right.
So maybe there's your projection. Maybe you, for some of these guys, you project really good ratios and don't get crazy with the innings total.
Yeah, right? Like, that's easy enough. But then when rubber hits the road and you want to draft the next Jeffrey Springs, because, you know, he gets all that March helium. I mean, I guess you're just out, right?
You
have to get him in January.
Yeah, I guess if the Rays are going to get, if Rays pitchers are going to get helium, I mean, maybe what we're talking about will be an industry consensus and they won't get that helium next year. We'll see. But, yeah. You know, if the Rays pick up pitchers over the winter, maybe people won't get so crazy on them. I don't know. We'll see. Because what you're saying, I've heard from a few others as well. So maybe that will become the consensus opinion. But maybe if the Rays acquire a pitcher over the winter, like, unless you're really confident in his health, I mean, maybe you project him to pitch really well for 130 innings. I know that's still way more than you got from Springs and Rasmussen, but
right.
You temper your expectations.
Right. And then what do you do with Glasnow? Of course, again, we're going to have the same questions we had this year with Tyler Glasnow, especially now that these back issues have cropped up, especially because let's face it. I mean, it hasn't really paid off. If you paid the going rate on Tyler Glasnow thinking you're going to get a steal once he comes back.
Yeah. He's still someone who could, go maybe a little bit either way. Like, he's at 68 innings. If, if this went well, you know, maybe he could get over 100, maybe he could get over 110 innings. If the 110 innings are good and they come with his strikeout rate's really good and they come with 140 strikeouts, like, and good ratios, like, that's not bad considering where he was drafted. I'd say that's pretty good, but you're right. We're one more injury from him away from getting 80 innings. And that's not what you're looking for.
No, it's definitely not. Yeah. So yeah, it might be another fade again next year there. We'll see. Maybe Zach Eflin and Aaron Civale will be like next year's helium guys. Zach Littell, anybody named Zach that they pick up, I guess. But, you know, there might be a pitcher to be named later. Erasmo Ramirez they turn him into something. Who knows? Because they do turn people into something. Now, I think some of that is they encourage max effort. I think that may lead to more injury, perhaps. I mean, maybe that's part of the solution. Next year, Shane Baz will be at their disposal. But we'll see. I don't know. It's a heartbreaker. All right. Another heartbreaker. Josh Jung, you know, fluke thumb injury, out 6 weeks.
Yeah, that one's another. Like, we didn't get too deep in the fantasy with McClanahan, because obviously it kind of story kind of writes itself. McClanahan's a crushing blow because he's the ace on a lot of teams. But Josh Jung, that one also is maybe not quite as crushing, but
it's pretty close.
You know, he was on pace for maybe to get 35 home runs this year. He's one of this year's, you know, true breakout players. He might have got to 100 in runs or RBIs. I would say maybe falls a little short, but yeah. And now he's a drop everywhere. That's a big blow.
It is. It's awful.
Yeah. It takes a big piece out of a Rangers lineup that has been amazing, but maybe has a bit of an overachieving vibe to it. And then now you take one of the overachievers out. I don't know. We'll see. Like, my complaint about the Rangers lineup before the season was I felt like it dropped off after the top four. Josh Jung's one of the players who kept it from dropping off.
Right.
He's gone now. So now you look at, if I just look at their lineup here at Fangraphs, you got Robbie Grossman, Travis Jankowski, Mitch Garver, Ezekiel Duran, Leody Tavares.
Well, and that's just the thing. Josh, Jonah Heim is not in that lineup right now.
Oh, yeah.
Either.
Yep. You're right.
That's another one that they lost. Now, Garver,
he
homered yesterday, I think. That's one that he offensively, I think he'll be pretty helpful. But there's a reason why they also traded for Austin Hedges, is they know defensively teams are going to run wild whenever Garver's behind the plate. One of those other guys that has lengthened the lineup is Ezekiel Duran, hitting 278, 323, 477 slug this year. 14 homers, 6 bags. He's not running a lot. I don't know if he's a real life great player. 17 walks against 90 Ks and 329 at bats or 329 plate appearances. You know, he's kind of a flawed player, but they've gotten kind of the max out of him, out of Tavares, out of Jankowski this year.
Yeah, Duran, the red flags are already up. Like, his OPS since the start of July is under 500. So
yeah.
He's just really bottomed out, but the other guys have been able to cover him. So, you know, he was at one time one of their best hitters, like like May, June, he's one of their best hitters. And then, and one of the reasons I think they're overachieving. Now he's bottoming out, but you can kind of hide him by burying him in the lineup, play him part-time. Now he's going to have to step up and maybe play every day. So they need him to pick it up, right, to get back, you know, to maybe not, well, he's not going to get back to what he was in May and June, but at least get back to being a 750, 730 OPS kind of guy, not the 500 that he's been over the last 5 weeks. So, yeah, I don't know. I still feel like with Texas, we could really go either way. They're one of the more interesting teams to me. Obviously, getting Scherzer and Montgomery is a big, like, they're a team that got a lot of pitching at the deadline. So
they kind of had to, though, right?
They did. That's right. So now their rotation, though, looks pretty good. Scherzer, Montgomery, John Gray, Andrew Heaney, Dane Dunning, you know, like that's pretty good. You could shoot some holes in Dane Dunning as an overachiever so far this year. Gray's been up and down, but overall, that's a pretty good rotation right now. I mean, a lot better than what we just looked at with the Rays. So, you know, I still think Texas makes the playoffs. I don't know if I think they'll hold off Houston or not.
Yeah, they're three games up on the Astros right now. Quite a bit more than like possible wild card team. So yeah, they're probably in good shape here. It's definitely something though that like they need some of these new guys to really step up right away. Evaldi coming back healthy would be huge for them too. He was so good before he got hurt.
Yeah, I just think there's enough arms there to keep them from bottoming out. Like maybe Gray just goes in the tank or Dunning goes in the tank at some point. But that's okay. As long as Scherzer's going, if Montgomery's going, like I think they have enough there where they're not reliant. Like one guy could kind of go in the tank and they could lose maybe four of his starts in a row, five of his starts in a row. But that would be okay because I think there's enough around them, you know, for them to stay in it. So, yeah, I mean, I've been kind of the low man on the Rangers all year. So I think people should just stop listening to me on them and assume they're going to hold off Houston and win the division.
Yeah. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's the way to go. I'd bet on the Astros too. I mean, getting Verlander is huge. I bet on them definitely in the playoffs. I think that's the area where you look at them and like, yeah, definitely going to be something there that I want to get behind a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think once Houston gets in the playoffs, they're going to be really dangerous. You do not want that first round matchup, in my opinion, against Houston. Like if they don't pass Texas and they end up in that wild card spot, like I would not want to be the team that plays. Like you just obviously, like it goes without saying, you want to play Minnesota. I just want to play anyone before Houston.
Yeah,
I'd rather play anyone before Houston in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. The other massive issue. Is the Tim Anderson, Jose Ramirez situation there and the suspensions that came from that. Now, Tim Anderson is missing games now, not because of the suspension, but because he's got a bad elbow. A sore elbow is now the case. It's listed as being a scratch. But, you know, this is just the call. Like, the White Sox were the leading character on Twitter over the weekend, and you never want to be the leading character on Twitter. And the White Sox, between the Tim Anderson Jose Ramirez fight and then the subsequent comments from Keenan Middleton and backing up by Lance Lynn on the clubhouse culture, you know, there were the kind of half rebuttals from the organization after that. Not a good time to be a White Sox fan right now.
No, or in White Sox management, you'd have to think there's going to be some fallouts from the Middleton and Lynn comments.
Yep.
After the season. I mean, especially Lynn, someone who's been there for a while. Right. So,
yeah,
like and would know the difference between between, you know, like a good culture and a bad culture in that organization. So, yeah, this is just a bad this is a team that could really, I think, like really get ugly down the stretch. Like,
yeah,
they're already third last in the American League. They're just a team that I think could be maybe as bad of a record as any team the rest of the way. Just the vibe there seems like awful. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving it too much. They did beat the Yankees last night. So maybe I'm playing too much into the Twitter stuff.
Very generous strike zone last night.
Holy, was it ever. And Dylan Cease still walked seven guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
That generous strike zone, he walks seven guys and doesn't pay for it.
Back-to-back games where just walks were... I mean, the strike zone was all over the place 2 days in a row for the Yankees. On Sunday, both the Astros and the Yankees walked 12 batters apiece. I mean, that's
yeah
that it's not a pitching issue at that point. It ceases to become a pitching issue. It becomes it absolutely has to become then an umpiring issue. And I'm very confident that was the case here.
Yeah, like those the Aaron Boone tirade was right on point. That's one of my favorite ones I've seen in a while, where he's just perfectly laying out, like, the pitch is here and you keep calling it a strike and striking them out, you know, and it's like, yep, that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So anyways, back to the White Sox. I think they're a mess. Tim Anderson's a mess. If your elbow's hurt, why don't you just start serving your suspension? But I guess it's because he'll be docked pay, right?
He's still going to appeal.
There's money in it for him to get that thing, if he can get it down to 5 games. I thought all the suspensions were really light. I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, I think so.
I was surprised. I thought that he and Ramirez would both get a number that would be 10 or close to 10 games.
Exactly. And I that's the exact number that Tim and I came up with when we were talking about it too. Tim Schuler and I, we were discussing, okay, we should be ready to be without him for 10 games. You know, there are so many things about this. About this fight, first of all, it was a real fight. I mean, you're a hockey guy, so you're like, yeah, whatever. But for baseball fans, it was a hockey fight. The way they squared off.
Yep.
The way the umpire said, "No, I don't want any part of this. I'm going to let it."
Yeah, get out of the way. Let him. You guys want to do this? Go ahead and do it. I'm not taking a shot as the umpire.
Terry Francona's like, "Boys will be boys." I mean, that sounded like a hockey coach. Even
it did. It did. Yeah, I was surprised, especially, like, I don't know, just looking at all the peripherals to it. Cleveland and Chicago are both kind of out of the race. I know Cleveland's like kind of in the race, but not really. They kind of pulled themselves out of the race at the trade deadline. Like, it would
weirdly,
be
yes,
super easy to make an example out of these guys if you don't want this to happen again. I mean, for Ramirez, like, 3 games, like, he decked somebody. They can say he didn't start it, but he decked somebody and he got 3 games. Like, that's not. If you play for Cleveland, Detroit, Kansas City, whatever, down the stretch, and somebody pisses you off and you want to deck them, you're only going out for 3 games. That's not bad.
Yeah.
So
I was stunned that Ramirez only got 3.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like anybody that drafted him is like, whew.
Yes.
You know, like, I can, if you're in LABR and you're in labor and you have Ramirez, okay, I'll deal with the risk of 3 games because I get 3 other games that week. You know, if you're in the NFBC, it's even better. I mean, you can set it for that half week if you know when he's going to start serving it.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, yeah, I he's going to appeal because of the money aspect to it, but I guess. But if he wanted to just take the 3 games, that was basically a gift. They could pick a day where it feels like a nice day for him for an off day and then just start the 3 games right there. Right? Like, that'd be really easy to say, oh yeah, we don't love this matchup, or we just think you could use a day, take this here. You know, I think the 6 games is enough. If anyone's still holding Tim Anderson, like, that's got to be enough to just say.
Well, I benched him in Tout Wars this week thinking he would start serving it because I don't think he has much of a defense. By the way, thanks a lot.
Maybe
for
the 3 games is his defense, the 3 games to Ramirez. Like, he could be like, what? I get twice as much as this guy?
Right.
Like, he decked me. Like, I get, and you're giving him only 3 and I get 6. Like, if he's only getting 3, I should only get 4 or 5. Maybe that'll be his defense.
Yeah, maybe so. But, like,
but 6 feels fair. Yeah. Anyways, if they had both got 6, I'm surprised that Anderson got double what Ramirez got.
Yeah, me too. I thought it'd be like 5. I think it'd be like 7 and 9. You know, I thought Anderson should get more. He basically kind of started it. But, you know, as Ramirez says, I finished it. But, you know, and then there was a lot of shenanigans after there too. After, yes. You know, like, Anderson coming out of the dugout, that probably is one of the reasons why he got a little bit more. But still, I mean, the White Sox, who cares? I mean, whatever. Our season's already ruined anyhow. Tim Anderson on my fantasy team, season's already ruined anyhow. What are you doing with Tim Anderson next year?
Oof. Well, he's only 30, so I think next year, he's only 30. Going into this year, he had 4 years in a row where he hit 300. Mm-hmm. He's always been a base stealer. This year, he might even finish with, I don't know, with the suspension. Maybe he finishes with 17 steals, something like that, 16 steals. That's something. The power is just completely gone. I think he's a late-round pick next year. Don't you? I don't, like, if someone wants to take Tim Anderson next year around, like, 13, they can have him. I think he's a bench pick or something like that at the start of next year.
He was a third round pick this year, and now he's going to, like, a bench pick. I mean, he's been that bad. you know, you used to always, okay, at least I get batting average, some stolen bases, and about 15 homers. I mean, he's Javi Baez now.
Oh, he was, yeah, he was like a really good foundational piece. Like where people would say, like, hey, you get a 300 hitter, you know, in round three or four or five or whatever, but you get a 300 hitter who can steal you 15 or 20 bases, get 15 or 20 home runs, just across the board production. Like, that's a great way, great, like, foundational player to be one of the first two or three hitters onto your to your team. And then, yeah, like you said, we're now we're talking about him just being like a bench player, or maybe like he's like a round 17. And then, so you're like, yeah, whatever. If he doesn't work out, you know, the guys around 17 kind of come in and out of my lineup anyways. If he doesn't work out, then that's fine. But yeah, I think it's got to be that low. I don't think I'll be the guy. I think there's going to be, it seems like we're headed towards a big shift in Chicago, maybe this off season, like just with all this stuff about the culture and everything. So maybe we'll just have to kind of read the tea leaves next year when spring training comes and see if this seems like a different vibe and a more motivated group.
Right.
But Anderson for years is someone who I've had Anderson on my teams very rarely over the years, because he's someone who usually has a super high BABIP. And I mean like close to 400, a lot of seasons, and then terrible strikeout to walk ratio. So when I'm evaluating him every year, I'm usually like, this guy is not a 300 hitter. And I project him to hit 270. And then other people obviously continue to project him to hit 300, and then they draft him.
Yep.
So this was one year I was right. A lot of years I was wrong.
Yeah.
And people got good value out of him.
Speaking of perplexing suspensions, I got a tweet from Jack, not the Jack of Twitter, but his name is Jack, asking, you know, commenting about the O's suspending their broadcaster for pointing out the O's record against the Rays in recent years. They even had like a graphic signed up for it. So it's not like they knew it was coming, and they still did a minute. And apparently they suspended someone else for what they were wearing. I think that must be Melanie Newman, I'm guessing, or something like that. But good stuff going on in the baseball ops, but what a clown show running this team in the front, like from like the ownership level and, you know, whatever henchmen they have.
Yeah, it just seemed so. Who is it? Was it Michael Kay? I think he referred to them as thin skinned. And I think that's it. It's like they're still carrying baggage from the rebuild. Like basically the whole, like you said, the whole graphic was, you know, during the rebuild, the Rays really owned us. But this season we've shown little signs when we've played them of, you know, kind of turning things around. So, but you know, they really owned us during the rebuild. So like,
it was 100% truthful. It wasn't inflammatory. It was nothing.
So when I watched it, when I saw the clip, I was watching it. Like I watched it twice. Cause the first time I watched it, I was like, did I miss something? Like, did he say something inappropriate? Like I was waiting for the shoe to drop. Like I was just waiting for him to say something inappropriate, and then I was like, well, sorry, what did he get suspended for? And I had to step back and think about it and think, oh, okay, this is what he was thinking. This is what I guess someone from the organization had a problem with.
Yeah, things are bad all over. Media companies really are getting screwed left and right. Media members are getting screwed left and right. You see layoffs across sports media all the time. I mean, that's one of those things that we're seeing here too. So bad. I don't know. And I like that all the broadcasters that I follow on Twitter are rallying around. But at the same time, I mean, it's like running backs rallying around the devaluation of the position. It sucks, but there's nothing we can do about it there.
It does seem like other organizations, I don't know. I don't get the vibe that this is going to be a problem, like a continual problem among broadcasters. It seems to be an isolated Baltimore thing. I don't know. I just think, and like you said, like the biggest thing to his credit is it's not like he went off on a tangent. It's not like he was in the middle of the game and there was some downtime and he was like, you know what? We've really had our butts kicked in Tampa for I don't even know how long. Like this, like you said, this was a fully planned. I will say that after spending many, many years working for MLB.com, like when I worked for them, you had to be very careful as to how you phrase things when you wrote your articles. You could write negative things about players, but you didn't alliterate. you didn't describe, like you just let the numbers, which is kind of what he did, but you just let the numbers do the talking. But since I've worked for Yahoo, I'm much more candid in a negative comment about a team or a player. When I did work for the league website, I learned very quickly to be very soft in any criticism about players. You could do it because you had to do it because you were giving people fantasy baseball advice, and mm-hmm. you had to tell them, you know, like, don't pick this guy up or drop this guy. But it would be very professional. I don't know, very soft. Like, it would be like, this person's hit 181 since June 1st, you know.
Right.
They may not be a fit in your mix.
Labor issues are a third rail. Media criticism's a third rail. You can't touch any of those things.
I was taught very quickly to be very careful with negative comments because you just didn't know when an owner or a general manager or a president would read something you wrote. And we would have fantasy blurbs at the bottom of articles, the main articles, when guys would get hurt or traded or something. So if you were going to criticize a trade or something, like, you couldn't really do that. You'd be very careful. Like, again, yeah. Like, if you were going to criticize a trade, like, you'd have to really be careful as to how you phrase that. And I learned that very early, and I did that pretty well. I work another government job in education. I had some experience with how you phrase things. So, but anyways, I after working that job for so many years, I was not surprised at all about the suspension. Like, I was surprised, but not surprised. I was right. Like, oh, I can see how that you catch the wrong owner or the wrong team president or something on the wrong day, and they do have the power to do something like this to a guy.
And that owner, said owner, John Angelos, was already known for his thin skin, because we saw, right. Like, you know, that one interview he gave. Well, it wasn't an interview. That was the problem. It was this, like, promotional thing on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And it's like he hadn't given an interview in 2 years. So the Athletic's writer covering the O's, Dan Connolly, I believe was his name, yeah. Asked him a couple of questions. And he's like, how can you ask me that on Martin Luther King Jr. Day? No, we're not stenographers, just giving you good PR, you know? And I think that's probably the case. I used to do some media stuff on MLB Network, and that hasn't happened in a long time. I don't know. I'm kind of outspoken every once in a while. I'm hardly the bomb thrower other people are out there, but enough that I've probably been critical of, you know, MLB, you know, I'm a very pro player when it comes to labor disputes. Maybe even some media criticism from time to time. So if that's the case, and I'm not on because of that, so be it. No one's ever said anything to me that, but all of a sudden I noticed that I'm not asked anymore.
I think it's more that they're pretty out on the fantasy business.
They are, like, which is so weird. I mean,
that's a whole other podcast, but yeah, the NFL has dove so far into fantasy. Right? Like, there's shows on NFL Network. Like, there's so much content
right.
on the NFL League website. Whereas Major League Baseball has, like, fully pulled out of having.
They do that little DraftKings snippet here and there. And maybe FanDuel now, I've seen a little bit too. But point is, and a lot of times they're doing the gaming side of things. They're not even doing the fantasy. Let alone, like, they used to have Corey and Mike do the fantasy 411. That's gone. They don't even have like a segment. They're like, you know, God forbid you have a standalone show. There's an audience there, and they choose not to serve it.
Yeah, I've always said, like, fantasy managers have got to be, like, one of your most likely sources of people to watch out of market games. Like, who's watching? You know what I mean? Out of market games. It's people who play fantasy. Are people?
Well, let alone programming all day long. I mean, they've got a thirsty audience that would love to have some good content during the day. And they just, I mean, I guess the ratings weren't there when they had that, but Corey and Mike did great work. I mean, I love Corey Schwartz and Mike Ciano. I mean, I think the 411 was a great show. You did some stuff on there.
Yeah. Right. Well, they kind of turned it over to me and Matthew Leach for a few years.
Yep.
And
that's
then,
right.
Cause Corey
Matthew
went
Leach
off
is great.
More, yeah. And Corey went off more on the StatCast mm-hmm. side, like stats side thing, which was great. And, yeah, and we had some great things going on, and then there was a season where I was going to Rogers Center and doing the afternoon on the, you know,
that's right,
and I was doing those in the afternoon show and doing fantasy hits, and we were getting more content on the website and getting more of our stuff on the front page, and it was like, okay, we're moving slowly in the direction that football has moved, where you integrate fantasy, and now, like, betting has become such a bigger thing, which is. which is still
in our entire industry. That's true.
Still loosely tied into fantasy. Like at the time, there was like when I was with them, it was more like you weren't sure, like, are we cool with DraftKings? Are we not cool with DraftKings? Like, is this gambling and the league shouldn't be involved in this? Or what are we doing here? But now it's fully, it's mainstream. And so I'm really surprised that they haven't, like I say, they went in the whole other direction and just cut, said, we're not going to run any fantasy content. We're not going to do anything. And I've been waiting to see if it's going to come back. So far, it's been a few years since I left there and they haven't made any moves in that direction. They changed some guys at the top and they're not really into doing fantasy, which is like not the end of the world. Like there's so many companies like RotoWire and so many companies that have fantasy baseball covered. It's just weird to have the league not.
They still have the biggest microphone. They still do.
It's weird not to have the league. Like when I used to do those hits, like they were 5 minutes on an afternoon pregame show, like not much trouble. You know what I mean? To put in a little bit of fantasy.
Yeah. And Brian Kinney used to be like big on that. I used to do something when he was with ESPN, the fantasy 350 on ESPN News. He and Michael Kim got to know them pretty well. They were great to me. I have no beef with Brian. Obviously I love BK, but you know, all that is gone. It's just gone.
Yeah. I hope it'll come back. Like, I don't know. Things change over time. Hopefully eventually it'll come back. So I kind of, after I left, I kind of thought for a year or two, I was like kind of kept in touch and like, are you sure you don't want to dive back in on fantasy? And then just kind of said, okay, I guess they're not really into it. But like I said, like just seeing the NFL move in such an incredibly different direction where I feel like they have more and more fantasy coverage all the time.
Yeah. No one's ever saying football's dying. That's for sure.
No. No.
Yeah, it's wild. All right. We got a little far afield, but that's what we do sometimes, especially in August, that we're allowed to do that. We are going to get you back on field by letting you know that we know the weather can impact how far a ball can fly, but we never know what all that heat and humidity or cold air is really doing to the ball. The Home Run Forecast Index gives us an easy way to determine how good or bad the air is for ball flight. The index is calculated by measuring stadium-specific weather conditions and is displayed on a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being the most unfavorable for good ball flight, and 10 indicating the most favorable air. There is a strong correlation between the index and the number of runs scored per game and the number of home runs hit. Games that have the highest index, 10 for the whole game, average over 10 runs and 2.8 homers over the course of the year. An index is created for each game, so you can see what it will be in any stadium and how the weather's influence might change over the course of the game as well as the wind direction. Right now, you can get access to the HRF premium site for only $5 a month and see what the index will look like for every hour of every game. Go to homerunforecast.com right now to sign up. Again, that's homerunforecast.com. Also, we're on the Blue Wire Network. Here are a couple of their ads.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Thank you for your indulgence with that. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. We're talking all things baseball. Fred, an interesting situation, unfortunate situation came up yesterday in the NFBC. They had some tech issues. Their site was down for three and a half, four hours yesterday. Unfortunately, on a Monday over lineup lock, when we had a game that started, we had a day game that started maybe 15, 20 minutes after the site went down. I personally was affected by that, trying to get, you know, I'm scrambling to get all my lineups set. You know, and that's shame on me for not doing it sooner. But you know what? Sometimes I need to see those lineups. Sometimes I've got other stuff going on during the day. Point is, you know, you have up until the start of game to set your lineup, but we weren't able to in many cases. That extended all the way to the 6:40 Eastern and 7:05 Eastern games too, before they finally got everything fixed. I don't want to illustrate the NFBC necessarily here, but it presents a thorny problem. Tech issues happen. What's your remedy for when that something like this happens?
Yeah, I felt bad for Greg and Tom and the guys, and like obviously we like the NFBC so much, and you don't want to see anyone you don't want to see anyone put in that situation. And on a Monday of all days, right? If this just happened to their site on a Wednesday, people would just be annoyed they couldn't check their teams. But like on a Monday of all days, so I felt bad for them. I thought the option to change your lineup till 9 p.m. was like okay. I think in hindsight, I would have just said that your lineup sets, that players just set tonight, or like so that everybody could just do whatever with the players last night. I think there's like a little inequity there as far as like I think they announced that, I don't know, what time do you think they announced that your lineups were going to lock at 9 Eastern? 6
probably like 7:30, 7:40 or yeah, so is my guess.
So you had like a couple hours. I think it might have been a little earlier than that. I think you had a couple hours. Yeah. So, okay, so... And I'm always a big proponent. Like I like the weekly leagues. I don't like daily leagues because I've got jobs and family and kids to run around and things like that. Like some people would have had the availability to really sit and watch what was going on last night. And, you know, at 8:50 go in and be like, okay, you know, this pitcher's out, this guy's going in, whatever. Right. Not everybody's able to do that. I think Scott tweeted out that he was not able to do that. He was busy last night.
Yeah, he went to the Taylor Swift concert last night. I know this.
Yeah, first world problems. Couldn't change his NFBC lineups.
My kid went on Saturday night too. It's
okay.
By the way, Taylor, the series of Taylor Swift concerts, it's our generation's version of like Michael Jackson at the peak of his powers, or U2 at the peak of their powers. I mean, it's insane how hard it is to get the tickets. What a phenomenon it is to go to these. You know, everyone dresses up as their favorite era and all that, and you know. And she goes on for 3.5, 4 hours too. I mean, that's ridiculous too, which it's ridiculously amazing. But anyways, I'm getting far afield again. The thing is too, we had an extraordinary event. We had the Seth Lugo start, you know, and you know, I think I saw it was being pushed out that I think not, you know, before like that people were able to remedy it, he was like 99% started, two start week for a pitcher that's been pitching very well. Mm-hmm. Got destroyed. A lot of people swapped him out. Other people swapped out Spencer Strider, Drew Smyly. One of these is not like the other. Which one could it be? Point is, though, you had that free look. Now, I think it's going to be funny if Strider shoves over the weekend, which is probably the likely result even against the Mets. But we'll see. But the Lugo situation is the one that was thorny, right? Because it's a huge windfall to get him out of there when you know what's happened.
That's right. And so I was trying to think of like the equity of the whole thing, right? So if you had Lugo, you could get him out. If you had someone who didn't pitch well, but was a late start Monday, you couldn't get him out. I think there's no perfect solution. I just think that maybe if they just had players lock instead of at 9 o'clock yesterday, but at first pitch for their game today, then
I've seen that as a possible solution.
You're just like, I think that would have been easy because then it doesn't matter what time zone you live. Like if you're in Western Pacific time zone, 6 o'clock last night, like you may not be home from work. Just if you look, and that's just people who work a standard work day.
Right.
You may not be home from work. If you're someone who has 15 teams and you get home from work at 5:40 on the Pacific coast, like good luck. You're not going to be able to probably check all those rosters. So I think today would have been like, okay, everybody, you can sit down last night whenever you have time, or this morning or this afternoon, mm-hmm. and you can change your rosters however you want, and they're going to lock at first pitch tonight. I think that if they had this situation happen again, I think that might be a better answer that kind of levels the playing field based on like what time zone you live in and how busy your life is. And that's one thing I've always loved about the NFBC is you can be amazing at the NFBC and still have a life. Like you don't have to be, you don't have to be like on your computer when a closer gets hurt because you got to pick up the setup, man. Like it does not like that. So, you know, if a guy gets called up, Emerson Hancock gets called up today, you don't have to be the first guy, you know, the guy who's unemployed and just sitting there refreshing his phone. Like you don't have to be that guy. You can actually have a life. So I felt like
I feel like that's a shot across my bow, by the way, in Yahoo Friends and Family.
You're employed. Wait, did you pick up Emerson Hancock?
No. Over the course of the season, Yuri Perez and a few others. Now, L.A. De La Cruz was just a righteous speculation. You know, it wasn't different. Like acting upon him getting called up. I guess I did it like a week before. So that one I'm not going to take any criticism for. But Royce Lewis is another one where it was working out before he got hurt, of course, and then he got hurt. But, you know, there's a difference. I get it. You know, most people have real jobs. And the trade-off is you kind of also know, like, oh, the NFBC is my major important league. I'm going to be constantly checking that site to get in. So they're probably going to be checking the best they can. But I agree. Now, I think that would have been an elegant solution. I don't mind what they did. I don't think there's – whatever solution you come to, I think you're going to have some people be pretty unhappy. I really legitimately wanted to get Clayton Kershaw in a league in one of my three mains and couldn't, you know, and then of course I could afterwards once they had the amnesty, but
right.
You know, I understand that it wasn't like Seth Lugo was left in a lineup by oversight. People affirmatively put him in. And so they kind of get a little bit of, but you can't set a rule just for one player or one type of player either.
Nope.
So,
a lot of good NFBC players set their lineups late after they see the major league lineups.
Right.
Like I know some people could say right away, like, well, you should have had your lineup set. Waivers went last night. You could have set your lineups last night. You could have set them this morning. That's all fine. You can like preliminary set them, but a lot of people who are really into the NFBC, the people who pay a lot of teams and a lot of money. A lot of those people wait for as many lineups to come out as possible, you know, before they set their lineups. And they were, if you didn't have something where they pushed it back, you were denied the opportunity to set your lineup. You had to have something. Like I said, I just think that they probably should have just pushed it all the way to today. And then it would be fair whether you had East Coast players, West Coast players, you know, no matter what you were doing. Well, when the information came out, I was at my kid's soccer game. One of my kids was playing soccer last night. I saw that they had a 9 o'clock deadline. I was able to kind of sit and go on my phone and adjust some of the lineups, but like
while coaching, that's pretty impressive.
It was not coaching. It was full spectator in the lawn chair, but you know what I mean? Like then you put me in a spot where now I'm not watching my kid's soccer game for a while to try to go back and forth.
Getting a glare from your wife. Why are you on your phone?
I was okay because I took him alone last night. So no one knows about that. I also had the Blue Jays. I'm also trying to watch the Blue Jays game on my phone at the same time as the soccer game. So that's tough too.
All sorts of truth telling going on in this app.
Yeah. But during the soccer game, now I'm going back and forth between Twitter and looking at lineups and going back into, and I'm looking at box scores to see how certain guys, oh, this guy was 0-for-4 this afternoon. Maybe let's see if I can maybe get him out now till Friday, because all I've got so far is an 0-for-4 and he's only got a couple more games. So anyways, I think
I did a little bit of that. I did on the positive side of things. Kevin Newman stole a base yesterday. Mm-hmm. Okay. He goes in. It is a 15 team. I had one marginal spot anyhow. He goes in.
Get the one steal. I'll take that in half a week.
Drew Waters, same thing. He got a stolen base last night. I mean, you know, you feel a little cheesy doing it, but them's the rules. Them's the breaks, right? I mean, chances are, I mean, they're playing more games this week than others. You take that chance anyhow. So, because it wasn't a super heavy slate yesterday either. That was the other thing that was kind of interesting. So, Tony Gonsolin, I thought, was an interesting decision. You know, he's getting a win.
Yep.
But he also had pretty terrible ratios. And so you kind of like this. We're already at that point in the season. Like, okay, how important is that win to me? You know, what's more important? Yuri Perez was a little close too. I mean, he gave up 4 runs in like 5 2/3, but he also got you 9 Ks. Like, how important are those Ks? Would you rather, you know, you're not going to get a win and you know, you're not going to get good ratios.
That's right. The Perez, and like you said, like most of these guys are starting again later in the week.
Yeah.
So unless the start's really killing you, you probably want to leave them in hopes that if you believe in the pitcher, in hopes that the second start will go better. The Perez one's a trickier one. The Gonsolin one, I'd almost always just take the win. I think wins are so hard to come by.
Yeah.
They're so fickle. And I find in all my leagues in the standings, like the wins are always tightly bunched because of
just
the nature of wins. Like it's very rare where I have a fantasy team where I'm like, oh yeah, there's no one within 5 wins of me, up or down. I'm just kind of floating. I find the wins are always tightly bunched. So I would take almost any pitching performance to get the win.
Tony Gonsolin hasn't been very good at all lately. I've been kind of like spotting him here and there, but with the 2-start week, I was going to start him. Like I have him in labor. I think it's labor. It's either one of the two leagues that I have in RT. I think it's labor where I have him and I started him. I was like, yeah, okay. But he's been pretty bad, and he was down 5-0 in this game and still got an easy win. Think about that for a second. For what a no good, awful, lousy week the weekend the Padres had against the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's a killer because they were starting to gain some traction.
Yeah.
After they went in that bold direction of, you know, trying to make the playoffs rather than punting on their season when most people would have gone in the other direction. But you're right on Gonsolin. Like I just looked him up here. Last 9 starts, it's a pretty good sample size. 6.89 ERA, 143 WHIP, and that's without a high BABIP or anything, and not a lot of strikeouts. 9 starts, 38 strikeouts, so basically 4 a start. Yeah, he's been quite mediocre at best, but a lot worse, I guess, than that. Has managed to get 3 wins in those games because he pitches for the Dodgers.
Right. And the Dodgers are just so desperate for
him. Although it's not like the Dodgers bullpen has been like really fully supportive. They haven't had a great bullpen either, but
they've been better in the last month and a half.
That's true. Yeah.
They were really awful in June. And then I think in the last month and a half, they've been a lot better, but still point holds. You know who else is yikes right now? Carlos Estevez. Oh my goodness. You know, I talk, you know, poor Angels. They did the right thing. They went for it. You know, they held Ohtani. They added to the roster at the trade deadline. They got Giolito. They got when Taylor Ward got hurt, they went out and got Grichuk, who had a horrific play in the field last night at a critical moment. They got CJ Crone. They got Reynaldo Lopez. Now Lopez is on a bereavement leave right now, but he should be back soon. But Estevez has had 2 gut punch blown saves after not blowing anything all year.
I was just about to pull that stat, but you already knew it. So it was to ask you before August at the trade deadline, how many blown saves did he have this year?
0.0.
Zero and a 1.88 ERA. Now he had just shortly before the trade deadline, he had given up 4 unearned runs in an appearance. No, I don't know if that, and they won the game anyways. I don't know if that really matters much, but since the trade deadline, he's pitched 2 1/3 innings and has given up 9 earned runs.
Really, I just picked up Lopez and friends and family. I think he's going to take over.
Yeah, that's a pretty good I think that's a pretty smart pickup because I don't know what they're going to decide, but those two meltdowns are epic and they both, like both meltdowns cost them.
Grand slam against the Mariners. Yeah. And that just set the tone for the whole weekend where they got swept in a 4-game series too.
Yeah.
Just awful, awful stuff. They and the Diamondbacks have just really, really tanked.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. The Diamondbacks, I didn't see coming as much. The Angels, I was like, I don't like that roster really, other than Ohtani. I was, even with Crone, like getting CJ Crone, I was like, ah, and Grichuk, I was like, I don't know. Those guys outside of Colorado now don't do much for me. So I didn't like that. Arizona, I am surprised. I thought they would be able to hold on better than they have.
Yeah, just look at the rotation. They've had injuries and they've got underperforming kids. Fott has not been that guy. As we talked about, spent some time talking about him earlier in the season. Hasn't worked out the way they hoped. Dre Jameson needs Tommy John. Who else? Nelson hasn't been very good.
And Kelly was out for a while, and Kelly's been really good for them this year.
Yeah, that's right. Kelly was out for, that was a devastating blow at exactly the wrong time. They are, you know, when we're talking about teams that didn't add starters, they're one of them. They did go out and get Seawald, but they couldn't get any starting pitching help, and they really needed it. Corbin Carroll's playing through a bad shoulder. Someone, you know, Marte has got his usual aches and pains, and he's been their second best hitter. So you kind of see it there a little bit that, you know, it's like I tweeted the other day, the Reds, the Marlins, and the Diamondbacks are very similar. They're kind of losing gas at the wrong time. It doesn't look like it's going to end well.
Yeah. Although, well, unless it ends well for the Padres or the Cubs, it's got to end well for one of them. Like right now, they're in that last spot. So unless the Padres or the Cubs jump up and get it, then it's got to end well for one of them. One of them has
to. But I think either the Padres or the Cubs will jump up and get it. I think the Cubs actually win the division. I think they're better than the Brewers.
Wow.
Cubs are good.
That's a hot take. Their run differential is certainly a lot better. Now they've padded that recently, but.
But it's been better all along. It's not, they padded it recently because they've been on fire, but even in June when they were bad, their run differential was indicated that they were better. They just, they win blowout games and lose close ones. That was their MO. And sometimes that's bullpen or a managerial whim. Other times it's just bad luck. And I think it was more on the bad luck side of things there. It's a good lineup. You know, they score a lot of runs. Pitching that losing Stroman hurts them a lot, but they're a legit good team, I think.
What do you think about the Brewers though now with Woodruff back? I don't know. Could they pitch their way?
They could.
Woodruff, Peralta has been good lately. Could they pitch their way to, you know, got some guys like Miley and Hauser just soaking up innings, being okay. I wonder if they could just pitch their way to win the division.
And Peralta's on fire right now.
Yes.
Too. That's the other thing.
It was great last night. And getting Woodruff back, like they're getting an ace level player back right after the deadline.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The Brewers are doing it with run prevention. The Cubs are doing it with offense. It's an interesting contrast there to see which is more sustainable, right?
And the Reds are doing it with
smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors. That's what I was gonna say.
It's young hitters. I mean, sure as hell isn't pitching. Luke Weaver's on the mound today. Hasn't given up a run yet, but we're only in the second inning, and so it's actually he's already ahead of the game because he didn't give up a first inning run, which is kind of his specialty. But the fact that the Reds boldly did nothing at all at the trade deadline, and I'm not going to belabor that point anymore. I say that, but I'm completely lying. But it's total malpractice. You can't tell me they couldn't have found someone better than Weaver. They couldn't have found someone, you know, some relief help. You know, that's something they could have done is linked in their bullpen. Even if even if trading for an ace isn't an option. By the way, Luke Weaver has now allowed a run, so he was listening. But, you know, that to me it's an insult to their fan base, which packed it in once they started contending. It's an insult to players like Joey Votto saying, you know what, we're going to choose to contend later. We're not going to go for it now. You know, Votto's gone after the year. I mean, basically, I think he's going to be gone. Like, no, we're not going to do anything to supplement you there. I have a hard time with that. I really do. Because you don't get to choose when everybody else is bad. You don't get to choose your contention window. You know, they were literally in first place at the time. And you don't get to, you know, that is contending. It's not like some sort of Pirates in April thing.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with the way they handled everything at the deadline. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if they looked a little bit like Ellie De La Cruz had a bad July. Like there's
he's struggling.
Yeah, absolutely. He's come back a little bit in August. Encarnacion Strand, like he's like hasn't been terrible since he came to the majors. Like he hasn't embarrassed himself, but he hasn't hit the ground running. Right. Like maybe they would have hoped. I don't know if maybe they looked around and thought, you know what, there's a better chance that these kids just fade down the stretch than that they pick it up. I don't know. But I understand where you're coming from. That like you said, at the time they were winning, and they still could win. They're still like right there, but doesn't look like they have the pitching for it. The Cubs roster does look better, like overall. Like when you factor in pitching, it just it does look like they'll end up ahead of the Reds. We'll see. And they certainly put it to the Reds right after the deadline.
They did. Twice. They had two series after the deadline against them and one right before the deadline. And between those, that's going to decide it. And I know you've made that point that you'd like direct competition to settle things. So
I still think it'll be the Brewers. I think they'll pitch their way to it, but
that's
I do
fair.
Agree.
I can see
it. The Cubs will hang around though.
I think the Cubs will make the wild card then. I think unless it's the Padres, still have the talent on their roster. You look at their run differential, same thing as the Cubs. Yeah.
And four games is nothing. Like, I know they had a bad series, like, with the Dodgers. The Dodgers are good. Like four games for the Padres with almost 2 months left. Like, yeah, they could do this.
They're just incredibly unclutch, the Padres are. It's amazing to me. They're winless in extra innings this year. Like, I don't think they have a grand slam this year. They just, you remember, they were Slam Diego at one point in time.
Yes.
And now it's it just show, you know, it's an impressive lesson in the concept of variance. But you know, they didn't really have to go that far out of their way to prove it. But Friday night, I mean, they kept on getting base runners after base runners early on, and Darvish was just keeping them in the game. And, you know, he allowed the only two runs against the Dodgers. I think he left with a 2-1 lead, maybe it was 3-1 when he finally left. And then the floodgates open in the eighth and ninth innings. But the damage was done early when they could have scored a lot more runs, and they just didn't. And that was just that's kind of like it was just so San Diego, so Padres this year, because they've done that all year long.
Oh, yeah. That's so many baseball games when you watch where it's a lot of sports where you watch and a team's like doing everything right except scoring. Right, where you're like, oh, they should have a lot of runs by now. And you're like, this is going to come back. It's football when you settle for field goals. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hockey when you're like, we had the puck in their end all period, and we got out of it with a 1-0 lead. And you're like, this is going to come back and bite us.
Yeah. Like, and it's always that debate between clutch and variance, right?
Like, yes. Yeah. Yeah. But they always say that in football. They're like, oh, they dominated the first half. They're up, you know, they're up 9-7 because they got three field goals. Like, this is going to come back and bite them later on. Like, yeah, and that's in baseball. When you leave runners on, my Blue Jays have done it a ton this year. It's been a big problem.
Right.
When you leave runners on early in a game, it usually comes back to bite you.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a whole list of players, slew of players to talk about, but I kind of like the – tonight was fun.
We got off on some tangents.
Yeah, I kind of like the general topics better sometimes. We'll just highlight a couple of these players from this list. James Outman, you know, he was really rad, really bad in May and June, really rough. Yep. Rad, bad, bad, rough.
He was rad in April. He was bad in May and June.
And now he's buff. And you know, he had four hits yesterday, all hard hit balls. If you look at like the hard hit rates, they really picked right back up. Pretty good rookie season. And you know, he's even doing it sometimes against lefties, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, his OPS against lefties now is 775. He's at almost 100 plate appearances against him now. So good on the Dodgers for sticking with the kid. Like a lot of teams, I think, partway during June would have buried him in the minors and would have said, you know what, you had a 552 OPS in May or 551 in June.
Yeah.
Why don't you go spend 6 weeks in the minors, see if that helps. Dodgers stuck with him, and he came back and hit 309 in July, 904 OPS. Yeah, he's profiling as someone from a fantasy perspective who could probably won't be a 2020 player this year, but he might have that in him, especially if we're looking at enough of an ability to hit lefties to stay in the lineup. So he's someone where, like, I'm not a big dynasty player, but like he's someone who's gone on a roller coaster. Like in April, you thought, oh my God, I have this dynasty stud. Like I've got this guy who's going to be on the Dodgers. The Dodgers are always good. They always have a good lineup. And I got this guy who's going to be on the Dodgers.
And I got him cheap too.
Right. And then all of a sudden in May and June, you're like, maybe I don't have anything. I just had a guy who had a good month until major league pitchers figured him out. And now it's back. Now you think maybe I've got something here.
Yeah. So well, you definitely have something.
It's he was just cut in some of my leagues. I don't know if he was some years. 15s. Like he was cut in some of my 15 team leagues at the end of June. So yeah.
Yeah. So I'm with you on that one there. Tell me about Davis Schneider. You know, big weekend.
Great story.
In Fenway. Kind of under the radar. It wasn't like, when's Davis Schneider going to get the call?
No, has never been a prospect. Like has never, Davis Schneider has never been a big prospect. He's always someone who's overachieved. You know, he's 5'9". He's always someone who's fought his way up through the system, just hit and kept himself moving up that way. The Jays were hitting so poorly after that series against the Orioles that they pressed the panic button and brought him up. And he gave them the spark they were looking for in Boston, right? First, I don't know if you like, I get inundated with Jay's stats, but first player in Major League history to get 9 hits, including 2 home runs in his first 3 games.
Yeah.
And just a really cool story. They hit him 3rd in the lineup on Sunday. They hit him leadoff last night. The Jays were looking for an offensive spark. Like, Bichette's out. Springer's having a miserable year. Guerrero's been slumping. Matt Chapman's been just meh since April. He's great in April. After that, he's just okay. Varsho stinks this year offensively. They were looking for a spark, and they said, let's bring this kid up and give him a couple games at second base, and you know, he can't be any worse. We're not getting anything.
Right.
And I don't know where it's all going to go. I put in our notes that I picked him up everywhere I could because I find that I'm actually bad at picking up Blue Jays. I'm usually so hesitant. I see so that I'm more likely to pick up someone who does well on another team. Than on the Blue Jays. But De La Cruz was cheap. Like this wasn't like picking up Ellie De La Cruz or sorry, Schneider was cheap. This isn't like picking up Ellie De La Cruz when he's on your favorite team and you got to put in $400 fab. Like I was putting in 25, right. 20, things like that. So I'll give him a shot. The Jays are looking for an offensive spark. If this guy keeps hitting, he will keep playing every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're probably right. I did pick him up in the RotoWire staff keeper league. So we'll see how it goes. I don't like that he's out of the lineup today. So it goes. One last guy, Royals. We're gonna talk Royals and a positive spin. They've had a good last 10 days, did lose last night. Cole Reagans has been very good. The guy that I kind of found myself trying to fab a little bit. He was my second option behind Chase Silseth in terms of starting pitchers I was going after this week.
Yeah, now how much of the fact that he's on the Royals scared you off, or is starting pitching so hard to get that it was just like any port in a storm?
It definitely lowered my bid by 2 units, whatever that was. You know, it's like,
yeah,
because I mean, you're just not going to get the support run or bullpen support, you know. And you mentioned you said in the outline, Casey got screwed last night. What was the circumstance there? I don't think
I was going back. Sorry. You know what? I was going back 2 days when I said that to the, was that last night? Now I'm getting my days mixed up. The Red Sox.
Yeah. It was Red Sox was last night. That was last night. They're in Philly over the weekend.
Yeah. The check swing.
And
last night, like, holy moly, that's a swing that counts. Like, like you are out. And that would have got them out of the inning. They may not have won the game, but that would have got them out of the inning. And then to come back with a grand slam right after that. Like they were furious and rightly so. That was an easy, like that should have been strike 3. Like that was an easy call that he should have been out. So,
right.
I mean, it doesn't really, like it matters for the Red Sox and it matters for teams that are facing the Red Sox in the wild card race. It doesn't really matter for the Royals.
Right.
But you know, they got screwed. If it had been a good team, that would have been a way bigger story.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But going back to Reagans, I mean, it's the type of trade that the Royals needed to make too. You know, they have Aroldis Chapman. I mean, he means nothing to them in the future. Reagans could mean something to them in the future.
Yep.
Got to do that and take a chance on him. You know, just the Royals history in developing pitchers. Of course it makes us run away a little bit, but yeah,
yes.
I'm intrigued with him at least.
Did you pick him up?
I got Silseth actually more often than not. So or I got outbid on Reagans when I didn't get Silseth, I just was going like minimum units on bids.
Yeah, I've been pretty much this year never KC, never Oakland when it comes to starting pitchers. I just feel like their win-loss records are so bad that it's like I almost just look the other way on all their pitchers. Maybe I shouldn't do that, but that's where I've kind of been. I was that way with Oakland right out of the gate and then kind of went that way with Kansas City.
Yep. yep.
just said, I'll just grab a good reliever instead. But you know what? With Reagan's, like, two starts here, the last two starts, 19 strikeouts. That's, you can't, like, that's really impressive. Like, yeah, he's worth an add. I would add him now for sure.
Yep. I would too.
Yeah.
I would too. All right. I think we'll end on that note. We got a lot more names we could talk about, but guess what? We'll talk next week about them. We got plenty more names to talk about then, and other tangents to go on there. Want to thank everybody that tuned in live and who is or otherwise are listening wherever you get your podcast after the fact. Thanks to the Blue Wire Network and Home Run Fantasy Index. Appreciate everybody involved there. We will be back again next Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.